Welcome to the Real Clear Values podcast with me, Tom English. This is a podcast about values, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Hello, everyone. It's my pleasure today to be speaking with Sobia Jawaid, who is a leadership coach, diversity and belonging consultant, a coach, and a speaker. She is also the first hijab-wearing female British Muslim black belt kickboxer to have represented England at European level and won a silver medal. Sobia, welcome to the Real Clear Values podcast.
Thank you for the invite, Tom.
Sobia, your story is so unique and so inspiring that I think that's a good place to start. So how did you, I'll just repeat part of what I just said there. How do you, as a hijab-wearing female British Muslim, get to a final and win a silver medal at a European kickboxing competition?
That's a great question, Tom. And as you ask me that, I'm going back a few years because I'm retired from the sport now. And when I started kickboxing, what you described as being a Muslim British female, that was an identity that was part of me before I started kickboxing. And then shortly after I started the sport. And for me, it was the vision that I had. And maybe at that time, I never phrased it as a vision, but I always thought to myself, I want to get a black belt. And as I went through my training, and I mentioned this in terms of my work as a consultant and a coach and a speaker around diversity, inclusion, and belonging, is my coach never ever made me feel that anything that I put my eyes to or set my eyes to was unachievable. So there was this me having high goals and high ambitions and my coach there facilitating it and accepting me for who I was. Because one of the other issues is that I made the choice to wear the hijab and start training around the time of 9/11. So there was so much going on. But going back to what helped me to excel was the fact that I had quite a big vision, quite big goals. And along with me was my coach, was always stretching and facilitating and supporting me. And I think that combination has been so valuable at that time, which helped me excel to those different levels nationally. I won, then competed at the European Championship, and actually also qualified for the World Championship too. So I would say those few things really helped me to excel in the sport.
That's really interesting to me, because you talk a lot about your coach there and how your coach helped you and supported you, and also your own ambition. You had this ambition. So what was it in the first place that inspired you to get into kickboxing? Because when a lot of people think about kickboxing, they think about white men with shaved heads knocking seven bells out of each other or kicking the hell out of the pads and things like that. So you're almost, in many respects, you're going to be the antithesis of what a lot of people are going to imagine as the archetypal kickboxer. So how would you challenge that? And what was it that really led you to that path?
What led me to that path in the first instance was support from my dad. So he was somebody who practiced judo, and he always saw the benefit of a martial art in terms of self-defense, in terms of discipline. And there's so many different values and so many different benefits of being part of a martial art. And so he saw that, and then the opportunity came, and that's where I suppose my initial interest was nurtured. And once I started training, I recognized that this is something I really enjoy. And there were so many different benefits. I look back in hindsight and I recognize that I was competitive, I was ambitious, I could give labels to those traits. Back then, I just loved training, and I knew that I wasn't wanting to progress, excel, and so on and so forth. And just as you mentioned, I was somebody of a minority in terms of being a woman of color, a woman who wearing the hijab. I was the only hijab wearing woman in my club. Initially it was female only, and progressively some men started training in the club as well. So there were a number of different reasons, but going back to that question, it was an initial interest that was encouraged by my dad.
Brilliant. That's really interesting. It's interesting you mentioned judo as well, because I've done judo in the past, and And that is really that there's a real spirituality to the practice of judo and the way in which I mean, it means in Japanese the gentle way, and it's very much about movement, about flow, about rhythm, and finding gaps and exploiting space. So it's fascinating that your dad had the vision as well to see what he'd taken from judo, from that practice of the martial art, the sport, whatever you want to call it, and then see how it could benefit you as well. So, but I'm interested as well in terms of, because identity is something that you deal with in your work. It's something you talk to people about as well. How did doing the kickboxing and being as unique as you were in that particular environment, how did that help you to build a sense of self and to learn more about who you are as a person?
What kickboxing helped me to do was be myself. And the more I progressed and the more I grew within myself and within the martial art, again, going back in hindsight, I can label them as values. They were values that I got clearer and clearer and clearer in. And my choices were rooted in them. So I give that label now as a coach, as a consultant. Back then, I was accepted, embraced, and included. I had that sense of connection in my club, especially with the coach, for being different, and in spite of being different, for still progressing and never being hindered. And for me at that time, when I was a lot younger, I recognized that I don't need to be different. I can be myself, and the right people are accepting me, they're respecting me, they are helping and supporting me. And when I say that, I mean some of my training partners and more so my coach. And what that did for me in terms of my identity was I saw my ethnicity, my gender, my faith, not as something that was holding me back. They were becoming more and more ingrained in my being. So I know some women who may be listening to this podcast at a later stage who are from my background, and they would understand, and maybe some other women who, or even men who have certain religious symbols, there's an identity around that, because when you walk into a room, instantly people know who you are and associate you with something or a religion. And so for me, my hijab became part of who I am and was then. It was not something I was challenged by, or I thought, okay, well, I need to get rid of this so that I can then be a better version of myself. It just helped me to incorporate those parts of my identity as my being, and just be really wholesome and confident in that. And I think that really coach, my coach, my kickboxing really helped me in that space, because, like I said, I had that belonging there, which I didn't have in my school, which I didn't often have in university or in the workplace. But it just goes to show how one space in your life where you are included, where you do have belonging, where do people do respect you, can create such a significant shift in your life. And for me, the ripple effects of that remain with me to this day.
Yeah, it makes such a difference, doesn't it, to have the unconditional acceptance of people that we respect and trust and rely on for leadership and guidance. It makes such a difference where people aren't challenging you, people aren't questioning why you're doing this. Is this what you want to do, or is it because it's what your parents have told you to do? But instead, just accept this is Sobia. She's showing up as she is, and I'm going to take her as she is, and I'm going to help her. I'm going to train her and mold her to become the best version of herself that she can, to be a champion, to be a winner, and to, because you've got to win a lot of fights to get to a European final. Surely you've got to have a lot of bouts of kickboxing and win a lot of fights, haven't you? How many fights or how many competitions have you, or bouts, if you want to call it that, have you been in?
So just before I answer that, Tom, I just felt a bit emotional when you were sharing that, because I am still in touch with my coach, and she knows about my journey. And I often speak, even in my keynote speeches, I'm still referring back to her. And that is something that must never, who you become, and no matter how far you get in life, it's always important to remember those significant people that helped mold who you are. And she did that for me, and she still does that. And there's such a warm, loving, connecting relationship that I still have with her. And going back to, and then also what you asked in terms of my training, there was a lot of training that I had to do, because what some people may not realize is that actually simultaneously I was still continuing with my education, my A levels, then university. I trained as a kickboxer for 10 years. So there was all the physical training that was required. There was the sparring, and then there was the competition nationally, competing in that, and then going to the next stage, and so on and so forth. So it wasn't something that was just one aspect of my life. At the same time, I was doing progressing simultaneously with my education, which was actually more important to my family. And going back to something I mentioned earlier on, was one of the reasons why I didn't go to my final in Florida was because one aspect was the fact that of my self-belief, one aspect was the fact that I had my education and a career in my family was far more important than going to a final or progressing with my martial art. So there's a number of strands there, but just that essence of, yeah, there was a lot that I was putting in, and maybe I didn't recognize it at that time in those two respective areas.
It's interesting that you talk about the different priorities that you had as well, because this really brings home a point about values. And that is that, and I think a lot of people get tripped up on this in the sense that values are always competing against each other in some way, shape or form. There's always an opportunity cost. So if you go to a final in Florida, then it means there's an implication for something else, because what is the price of that? There's always a price to be paid for whatever it is that we do. So it's interesting that you had that real clear sense of vision in terms of what was most important to you at a given moment in time. And all this stuff kind of comes together for you, and it molds you, it shapes you, and you have influence on other people as well in those contexts. And you really find out who you are. Like you say about the training itself in kickboxing helps you to learn more about who you are, your characteristics. That's one thing that I love about any form of challenge or trial, whether it comes through martial arts, whether it comes through sport, whatever it is that people like to do, or just life itself and whatever life throws up, because we're all going to be challenged throughout our lives. These things really teach us about ourselves. They teach about our strengths, teach us about our weaknesses, and they give us those opportunities to learn and to grow. And I suppose the question is, it does beg the question from what you're saying, Sobia, do we have the right people in our corner? Do we have the right coaches? Do we have the right mentors? Do we have the right people who can help us to avoid the banana skins along the way, who can reach out their hand for us, you know, to help us up, not to pull us up, but to extend their arm so we can then pull ourselves up with their help? And it's a big question, isn't it? What would you say, or what advice would you give to somebody in choosing those sort of people to make sure that they've got the right support through the challenges that they face?
Yeah, as you asked me that question, my thought just moved away from just kickboxing and just to general challenges in life. And I think it's really important to be honest and authentic and transparent that some of the challenges that we go through in life, whilst we're going through those challenges, we're not open about them because we're trying to navigate through those issues and what I call troughs, because I help leaders with their values and businesses with their values. And there's an activity I do, which is going through your peaks and troughs. And during those times in your life, more so during your troughs, which are your challenges, you connect to the values that are most important to you. And going through those challenges, going back to your question, it is essential to have the right people in your corner that are going to support you. And here's a big misconception people have, that you must have a huge group of people or many people that are fighting your corner or supporting you. But in those dark, difficult and challenging times, even the words of one person can be enough to shift the needle and for you to get what you need in that moment. It may not have to be one person who's there with you consecutively. It may be just somebody you've interacted with. And Tom, you and I are, you know, we come from a faith background, and sometimes what we need to hear, which is inevitably from we believe is from a divine source, comes in different forms. Sometimes we say you're like an angel in disguise, right? Where does that saying come from? That angel in disguise, maybe just one person you've met and you've never had to interact with again, but they've given you a direction or they've said something to you where you've become so much more clearer on something you were unsure about. So that message was there. And is that always from one person? I don't think so. No, it can be from multiple people. But at the same time, it's really important to have, and I call them your high vibe tribe, your coaches, your mentors, and they can just be one or two people. For me, during my kickboxing time, it was my kickboxing coach. During my business, it's been a number of different coaches. And at every stage, what is really important is the person or the people that are supporting you, are they helping you to be a better version of yourself? And if they are, they're the right people for you in your life.
Yeah, that phrasing that you use there is so crucial. A better version of yourself. So they're not trying to change you. They're not trying to manipulate you in any way, shape, or form, but they're working with you almost like partners. They're almost partnering with you to help you be the best version of yourself and to figure out what that is. And that's so important. That is so important that there is that sense of, this is, you know, meeting people where they are. This is one of my big phrases that I really think is important, to meet people where they are. And somebody shared with me in recent years that the end of that phrase, meet people where they are, is because you won't find them anywhere else. So if we don't meet people where they are, we're not going to connect with them. So it's really, really important. But it is really important that we do connect with people, like you say, about the high vibe tribe in terms of the coach and the mentors and the people that we look to, is that there are some fundamental shared values as well. And like you say, being a person of faith, we're from different faiths, but in many respects, we're from the same faith, because there's so many similarities in principles across the faiths that there's just more that would unite us than divide us at a fundamental principle-centered level. And I want to talk about that a little bit now, Sobia, in terms of your work in relation to diversity. I'm interested in how you, because diversity is spoken about a lot, and I think some people are quite skeptical about this, and maybe there's some cynicism about this, and some people might think that it's the flavor of the day or whatever it is. And then, like, well, what does diversity really, you know, what does it mean in a practical sense, and how can we show that it's actually good for business and not just something that's a fluffy idea? So what would you say to the skeptic on this, Sobia?
Away from a business case, away from any business proposal, I would say that and I'm going to bring my faith into this, is that there's a saying that you have been created into nations and tribes so that you may get to know each other. And this is something that comes from my faith. I can't exactly recall the reference of that, but when we take a look at humanity and we take a look at the human population, we all are so different. So let's call that diversity. We are so different. Okay, so now let's take it to a microscopic level or an organizational level. Even in that organization, you have diversity. It may be in terms of gender, it may be in terms of race, it may be in terms of ethnicity. Okay, everybody's different. What are you doing to nurture those differences so that there's connection, there's respect, there's understanding? That is the stance I take with diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because yes, it seems to be it's high on the agenda for many organizations. And even before it was high on the agenda, the reality of it is that we as human beings are hardwired for connection. And the unfortunate thing is, in this modern day, we are further disconnected in spite of having so much technology that connects us. So in terms of organizations, yeah, there's a business case. And what it does is, if somebody has that connection, if somebody feels like they're belonging, they bring a better version of themselves to work. They are able to tap into so many of their so much of their potential, so many of their skills that they may ordinarily may limit. So what you're getting is a wholesome person coming to work. If they're respected, if they are trusted, if there's connection, they're performing better. And when they're performing better, clearly they're more effective at work. So it affects the results, it affects the productivity, the performance. So yes, there is a business case for it and an organizational case for it. And it's about KPIs and so on and so forth and targets. But even in a very holistic world, we still should be making those efforts to get to know one another.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that quote that you shared about the tribes, about there being different tribes, about how we can get to know each other because of that difference, as a result of that difference, not in spite of the difference. It's almost as though this difference is inherent, that there are different groups in the world, and that through that difference, this is our opportunity to talk to each other. This is our opportunity to connect with each other, to be able to empathize with each other, to learn from each other, because we've all got so many different perspectives. And it strikes me, it struck me time and time again throughout my career that we need each other. And this isn't like some cheesy sloganeering, but we really do need each other, because we don't have all the answers ourselves. We have to look at problems from multiple different angles, from many different perspectives. And to me that aspect of it is just self-evident. What I think is challenging, and you touched on this, and I think we talked about this a little bit before we hit record on this, the challenge is that the internet and the Internet of Things and social media and all the platforms that we have now enable more connection, easier connection, but not necessarily deeper connection, or not necessarily connection that's deep enough to build a strong relationship of trust. We're not breathing the same air as people. We're not in the same room as people. We're not looking at them eye to eye. We're looking at into, we can see each other now through Zoom, which is wonderful, and that helps us to connect. But there's a difference to being actually in the room with someone, as opposed to seeing people online. So it's tricky, isn't it? It's almost like it's a potential banana skin in its own right, that we have all this connectivity. It's like that saying, water everywhere and not a drop to drink. If you imagine, you know, ship being at sea surrounded by water and none of the water's drinkable, sometimes it can feel like that in the internet world, in the internet age, where yes, we're surrounded by all this connection, but are we being fulfilled through it? So very good points there, Sobia. And I like what you say about what you did about diversity, because irrespective of any hard numbers or KPIs, it's just from a holistic, humanistic point of view, it's just a good way to be. It's a good way to live. I always find an inner satisfaction when I learn from somebody else and somebody else's culture. I do. I've had Muslim neighbors for many years, and I love talking to them about their faith and exchanging ideas with them about, you know, different teachings, different principles from the different religions. I find it fascinating. I find the similarities fascinating. And even in the similarity, there is difference, because there's a different way of articulating it. Like you just articulated it then about tribes. I've never heard that before in my life. I've never heard that saying before, but yet it resonates with me, and it makes so much sense. So there's so much that we've got to offer each other. So let's move on now to talk about inclusion, because inclusion is something else that you talk about as well. And in relation to inclusion, I'm interested in looking at how you would define that, because there is definitely a distinction between actual belonging and fitting in, isn't there? So what would you say inclusion means, and what does it mean to really belong somewhere?
There can be so many different analogies that can be given. I'm not going to give the standard one that's available on the internet. As I said earlier on, if you feel you are respected, you feel that you have that connection with somebody, and you feel that you can bring your authentic self to wherever you are. I'm not going to just confine this to work, although I do work as a consultant and a coach in diversity, equity, and inclusion in organizations and businesses. I'm talking about a very holistic space. Whenever you think about a space, and this is not just about different people, this is any space where you felt a belonging, where you felt you've been trusted, you're respected, you're valued, you can bring your authentic self. You don't need to pretend to be something you're not. You don't hide away from something that is part of you, but you're just hiding it because somebody might judge you. And I know there's different levels to it, but there is this inner connection that you have. There is this feeling and emotion and this sense that's created where you can bring yourself. And we talk about bringing your authentic self to your work or bringing your authentic self to a situation. That's what belonging is. You're valued. You're seen as a wholesome person. And your physical appearance is a part of who you are. Inclusion is a slightly more super, I wouldn't like to say superficial, but inclusion is you include somebody in a conversation. You may exchange some words with them. They're part of the conversation. You've included them. But that belonging is a lot more deeper rooted. So there's different levels. And so that's how I would define belonging. And can that be created at work? Some people, and there are consultants out there that would say belonging is not for the workspace. You're not going to belong at work because it's not really a space for belonging. I don't agree with that because in my line of work and even in my sporting, I've had some of the strongest sense of belonging in those spaces. Sometimes even more so than what may superficially seem like my own space. Because going back to one of your earlier questions and some of the comments I made, one thing about identity is the word is intersectionality. I'm not just a Muslim woman. I'm not just a British woman. I'm not just a Pakistani woman. I have so many different parts of my identity. And sometimes when I'm in the circles that may not seem like they're my circles, sometimes they are because I have a sense of belonging there because I share values with the people that are there. And sometimes when I'm with the people who are superficially part of my group, who may be Muslim women, maybe women of color, sometimes I've not had that sense of belonging because I've been seen as being too anglicized or too westernized. So I come from a point of view that, yes, you can create belonging at work and it takes that deeper connection. It's not rocket science. It might be asking somebody about how was your weekend? What do you do with your children? That human connection.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many opportunities to connect with people just simply by caring what somebody else has got to say. Just caring about how somebody else does things, how somebody else views things, and not having an agenda, trying to change anybody's mind or trying to convert anybody or convince anybody, but simply just trying to understand or see the world through someone else's eyes. One thing that has particularly impressed me about you, Sobi, over the years is the way in which you practice diversity yourself. So you don't just go into organizations and talk to people about this, but you practice this yourself in terms of not just the people that you coach, but also in terms of the mentors that you've sought out as well and that you've hired. So what can you say about that, and particularly what sort of advice would you give to people to look past the labels, all these labels that we put on ourselves and other people? How can people look past the labels and practice diversity for their own benefit as well?
It's a fantastic question, and I don't think I've intentionally done it. I haven't intentionally gone out and sought a diverse coach or a mentor. It goes back to the values, Tom. It really does. If what you're trying to achieve and the other person can support you in that and respect you for who you are and you connect on values, that is the right person for you. There may be, you know, I've worked with, as you've said, a diverse range of coaches and mentors, you know, from a Jewish background, Christian background, from an atheist background, people who believe in no God. For me, it's about values. And can you connect on values? Absolutely, you can, because spirituality for me is a huge value. But for somebody who, say, for instance, I've had a coach who believes in the universe or believes in a higher power, there is still that essence, that value of spirituality that connects. We may have different labels, we may have different ways of practicing, but it's taking the good that serves you to be a better version of yourself. So for me, that's key, because I show up and I practice that and I implement that in my own life. And those people also are attracted to you. So I've worked in terms of my coaching to, if you actually looked at the credentials and the identity of some of my clients, you'd think, why did they choose Sobia? But those, in terms of, if you physically saw the labels or the identities, and you know, we as human beings, sometimes we like to categorize people. The key thing is we've connected hugely on our values. The values that are important to them, maybe they come under different labels. Maybe it's a different faith. Maybe it's a different way of practicing. But the key thing is those values have been there, and you can stretch, support, and challenge those people because you get it. It's just like mine and your conversation, and a really powerful conversation we were having before this podcast recording is about spirituality. We're under different labels, but your spiritual experiences, I can resonate with them because mine are different, yours are different, but there's a power in that spiritual experience. And when you get that, the words and the labels will be different, but that experience, you can understand, you can resonate with that. And that is so much more powerful than just superficially being of the same label.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that word that we mentioned before the call started, transcendence, and you talk about self-transcendence. And transcendence is something that I talk with my clients about as well, my mentoring clients, and that idea of there being something bigger than us, a higher power. It's not just about ourselves and our own egos and what I want to do. It's about higher power and us being part of something bigger. Because in my own viewpoint, in my own faith tradition and my own beliefs that I've integrated myself and taken ownership of, I believe that, you know, for me, I am a son of God. That is my identity. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that I'm any better than you or anybody else, because if I'm a son of God, then you're a daughter of God, and everybody else is from God as well. And so they're the same in that respect. So there is that equality of status in relation to the Most High, whoever that is, whoever you believe that to be, and however you practice in your own faith, or if you don't practice, whatever. But the idea is that there is something beyond ourselves, that we and our egos are not just the be all and end all, and we don't just live to serve ourselves, to serve the appetites and passions that we have as human beings, but actually we're here to make a contribution to something bigger. You know, it starts off, I talk to people about stewardship, taking care in the home, making contributions in the community, and also in the wider world as well. So it's so powerful how we can talk about this from different labels, if you want to put it like that, different faiths, different perspectives. But really, it's fundamentally very, very similar. And absolutely, we can do a lot together, can't we?
I 100% agree with that. And I do go back to labels, because within Islam, we're servants of God. So we're not sons and daughters, we're servants of God. And we believe that there's one God and he is the ultimate power. But this is where it comes into my coaching, and going back to you label it as stewardship. I speak about humble confidence. And earlier on, we were speaking about this again before the recording, is this essence of letting go of control. And we are in a world where we want everything in our control. We want to control everything. We want to know what X, Y, Z. We want to know what, if this happens, what will be the outcome? The reality of it is when you have this self-transcendence, or you believe in God, you understand that, and this is what I coach, is you've done your best, right? You've done your best. And if it hasn't been the outcome that you wanted, there is a bigger plan in place. And that's where that element of letting go comes in. And how does that serve people is that you then have this inner peace, knowing that you've done your best given the qualities that you have, And how also does spirituality and this element of humble confidence come in is the fact that you are unique in your own way. You have been gifted a unique set of skills. And for me, is uniqueness is your superpower, right? Quote unquote. But call it God, call it whoever, whatever your label is. You are walking this earth because there's a gift you have. Your gift is not going to be the same as other people. Stop comparing yourself to others and focus on what you have and share that with others. And when the more and more you do that, the more aligned you will be in your mind, body, heart, and soul. Self-transcendence. In this day and age, many people miss out the soul, the spirituality, but it's part of us. And when you acknowledge that and you grow in that and you align in that, again, you mentioned stewardship, I will mention a different label, but it's about knowing that there is a higher power. And sometimes people don't have a label for the higher power, but I still welcome those conversations and those clients, because as long as you're willing to consider there's something, and as I share this, this is one of my clients crops up into my mind. And he never even regarded himself as a spiritual person, but there was something really interesting he would do. He would go out into the hills by himself and watch the sunrise or the sunset and be around nature. And when we're around nature, what are we reminded of? We're reminded of something that we're in awe of, something that reminds us of beauty, of something that's almost beyond our limitations. And so people practice it in different ways. And as coaches and as mentors, by treading our own paths, we can recognize it. And that's something I've been able to do during my journey of personal development. And going back to that, the connection with people who are diverse, my coaches and mentors, is some of them have treaded the path and they recognize where I am and they can support me.
Yeah, totally. That's so interesting. There's so much good stuff from what you just mentioned there, Sobi, to pick up on. I love what you say about not competing with other people. Competition is really the enemy of creativity. I think it's a massive distraction to compete with other people and kind of notch yourself up on where you are versus them, and that sort of thing is just nonsense, because like you say, it's not even a metaphysical consideration to realize that we are unique. We are by definition unique. It just is a fact. It's not about this idea of belief or faith or anything else. We are unique. There is only one of you. There is only one of him. There's only one of her. And because of that, we all have something unique to offer. And that comes through our creativity. But if we get, like you say, you know, in reference to competition, if we get distracted by other people and what he's doing over there, what she's doing over there, and trying to make these arbitrary comparisons without hardly any of the information, then we just get distracted, we get knocked off course, and we're not actually able to learn, to create, and to contribute what is ours to do on our path. And the other thing, another thing that you said as well about having that faith, and I would call it faith in a non-religious sense, that when you put your best foot forward on your path to serve those that you are to serve in the way that you are to serve them, that things will work out for the best, even if you struggle, even if, and well, it's not if, it's when, because it is going to be a struggle, right? It's like the analogy in the Christian language is to pick up your cross, to take up your cross. So that's not an easy thing to do, right? Inherently, you know, there's something sort of foreboding about that. But it's the idea that you take on the mantle of responsibility that is yours to take on. And that's really the essence of stewardship. It is voluntarily taking on that responsibility that you can contribute through. And so I really love this conversation. I love what you've got to say about this, Sobi. The other thing to mention as well is that connection with nature. I love it when people talk to me about connecting through nature and just going into the mountains or going into the woods or into an open space, a field, and just being, just connecting. Because a lot of these people don't necessarily have a faith at all, or they say they don't have a faith. But I can't think of much that is more spiritual than that, than going into nature and receiving that connection. I have to say, One of my earliest spiritual experiences as a boy was when I went to my grandparents' farm with my parents, and I went down to the river on my own, and it was quite a decent walk from the house. It was a big farm, big area. It was back in the days where health and safety wasn't such a thing, and I was just on my own as a very young boy. And I remember, and like you say about that sense of awe, I remember when it first struck me how small I really was, when I was stood by the bank of this river and I could see some fish swimming about in the river, and I could see the blue sky. It was a really sunny day, and I could see the massive farmhouse in the distance, this tiny little dot. And I just thought, wow, how small am I? And I must have been, I don't know, 9 or 10 or something. But I just remember feeling that smallness, that the insignificance, but also the connectivity as well. So I didn't think, oh, well, I'm so small, I'm so insignificant, I don't matter, I'm nothing, I'm worthless, that sort of thing. Because I felt this connectivity to nature. I felt this connectivity to the whole, the source, or whatever you want to call it. And it was just absolutely fantastic. So thank you for sharing all of that. There's so much good stuff here. But I really love that point. And I want to underline it again that you mentioned about creativity, creating instead of competing, because sometimes it is that binary. It really is that binary, because I think if we're looking around comparing with others, competing, we're not creating, are we?
And that's there's a couple of points that you've mentioned which I'd just like to just share. And I love the fact that you've come up with that, coined that phrase about creativity and creativity and competing. And here is also one thing, is that when we are competing, and the phrase that I use is compare and despair, because when you compete and you compare, naturally the default is to feel you're not good enough. And this is a classic sign I see in some of my clients who are struggling with their confidence, is that they're comparing who they are to others. And social media is one of the biggest reasons why people get into that hamster wheel. So actually, one of the things is, look at, what are you good at? What are your skills? What are your qualities? What are your achievements? And when you look at that, in your words, your creativity, your strength, your confidence will blossom. And when you're able to do that, another point that you mentioned, you may be a tiny person in this huge universe, but the reality of it is that you have, and I truly believe this, Tom, and I've experienced it myself with my clients and at parts of my life, is you may be one person, but within you, you have a majesty. There's a majestic, I call it the soul, right? Your soul is majestic. Your soul is limited in a physical body, but the potential of you is huge. It can change lives. It can change directions of so many people's lives. And where does that come from? By focusing on what you bring to the table, not what others bring to the table. So you may be one person, you may be tiny, small in comparison to everything, but the more you focus on your own skills, your own achievements, your own uniqueness, the impact is huge, because you have the potential to be, like I said, it's huge. You know, I think as a human being, your soul has a majestic quality, and we feel it sometimes. When you have a soul connection with somebody, it's you can't rationalize it. You can't put it into you can't contextualize it, because it's something so vast. So I think it's really empowering. And one of the other terms I've coined is compare and achieve, because one of the other teachings that comes from my faith is always look at those who are below you, so you have patience and you can also be grateful for things. And look at those who are above you in good deeds, so you can then push yourself up and achieve in those areas. So depending on your circumstances, if you're going through hardship, if you're looking to be patient, if you're looking to feel good about yourself, think about those who are less fortunate than you. And if you're wanting to grow and develop in your deeds, in your business, look at those who are above you so that you can stretch yourself. So there's so many different dimensions to this.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And that's the point, is that it's the intention that is key, isn't it? It's the intention. You know, why are we making comparisons? Why are we looking at anybody else? Are we doing it to help to learn from other, to help ourselves to learn from other people and to move forward? Or is it that kind of scoreboard thing, which can be all too easily turn into some egocentric thing where we either get depressed because somebody else is higher than us, or we become prideful because we think that we're above other people. And like you say about social media as well, we look at things on social media. Oh, he's doing this, she's doing that. And we don't have a clue. We just do not have a clue what is going on behind closed doors, because everybody, to some extent, is showing you the highlight reel. Everybody is. And
Absolutely.
why not? Why would people air the dirty laundry on social media? That they're not necessarily going to do that. So it's not that people should do that any differently, but it's just for us to be clear about what we're actually looking at. What is it that we're actually looking at? Someone who's achieved something amazing might have had something excruciatingly difficult to go through in their personal lives that just has not hit the internet and that is not within our range of knowledge. So there's so much to think about, and it's just great to have that expansive view and to think not in a self-centered way, not in a selfish way, but looking to ourselves, like you say, looking to ourselves in terms of what we can contribute and maintaining ourselves in such a way that means that we can be useful to other people. Because this is the paradox, isn't it? It's that by taking care of ourselves, we're not being selfish. We're actually setting ourselves up to be selfless. Because as we look after ourselves, as we look after our well-being, our character, our competence, we are infinitely better positioned to serve others than if we neglect those things. And if we just pursue our own hedonism, our own pleasure, power, money, all these other things that give the quick hit in the moment, but bring about decay in the medium to long term, or even in the short term sometimes. So,
Absolutely. And what you've just said, I often say you can't pour from an empty cup. So that self-care, replenishing yourself in so many different ways, growing in terms of your mind, body, heart, and soul, that is so important, and nurturing that, because then you can pour into other people. And by pouring into other people, there's this exchange that happens, and you also are you receive the rewards in so many in a multitude of ways. It's not just a monetary transaction. It's not just a transaction of words, but there's so much more there. But that can only happen when you are pouring from that cup.
absolutely, absolutely. The other analogy is put on your own oxygen mask first. And I think we can go beyond that even. You know, it's not just about survival, but it's about going beyond survival so that we can create, and creating so that we can contribute. And like you say, Sobia, use the uniqueness that we have within us, that soul, to make the world a better place. Sobia Joaid, thank you so much for your time on the Real Clear Values podcast.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for listening to the Real Clear Values podcast with Tom English. If you know anyone who is looking for success that's both meaningful and sustainable for themselves or their organization, then please send them this podcast. And if you yourself are looking to create a life of purpose, meaning, and fulfillment for your own version of sustainable success, then I offer a mentoring program that will get you on your way. Just go to threestewardships.com or message me directly to tom@threestewardships.com. That's tom@threestewardships.com. Until next time, I'm Tom English, and I wish you all the best in your own pursuit of sustainable success.